Abby gripped two cans tighter as they crept down the stairs. Bang, bang, bang. The door vibrated like a drum. Abby thought that only a crazy person would keep pounding like that. What if it wasn't Mr. Marsh? She felt a sudden stab of fear. Nobody locked doors on Castine Island.
The door's unlocked, she whispered to Jordan.
Lock it, he said. I'll look out the window. Abby breathed easier once she had hooked the security chain in place. Huh? Jordan exclaimed. It's only Kevin and Emily. Kevin seemed surprised that someone had finally opened the door. He was in his pajamas and his cheeks were glistening wet. Abby had never seen him without his glasses. He looked different, younger than 13. Emily, wearing a nightgown, stood behind her brother with a blank expression, absently twisting strands of her long brown hair. She had always reminded Abby of a fawn, timid and shy. The road was empty, silent. None of the usual bustle of Saturday traffic heading out to the harbor. It was like an eerie dream. A crashed truck, the sun and sky different shades of purple, shafts of lavender light spearing great swirls of dust. Not a single car, not a gull soaring overhead. Dad mysteriously missing, her neighbors distraught and half-dressed, saying nothing. Abby stared at them, and they stared back. Toucan pointed with a crinkled brow.
Kevy, sad.
The words broke the spell.
Our parents?
Kevin buried his head in his hands and sobbed. When he looked up a moment later, Abby had never seen such a sad expression.
They're dead,
he cried. I was changing Tracy's diapers at 4 o'clock in the morning when Thor Gibbs showed up. Not the height of glamorous living, I'll give you that one, and definitely not something I thought I'd ever be caught doing for any midget human life form, particularly my own. But hey, you want the whole story, you're going to get the whole story, poopy and all. It was his big black 68 Norton Commando I heard first. I heard its roar from miles away in the still of the country night, heard it grow closer and closer, then pause. Then came the crunching of gravel as it eased up the long private drive that led from Joshua Town Road to the farmhouse. Silence followed. This didn't last long. Silence was always brief when Thor Gibbs was around. Jan Novikov had prepared himself for this painful meeting with Elizabeth, but he was not prepared for the shock he felt to be met by a white-haired stranger. Dazed, he looked at his tie clasp she had hurriedly thrust in his hand.
I came in Elizabeth's place.
Her lower lip quivered as she said it. My name is Emmeline Constance. I hope the tie clasp proves you can trust me. Jan reached for her hand and held it as though he was afraid she would escape. Where is she? He demanded.
In the hospital, and I'll thank you to let go of me, young man. I live in Glen Echo. I found a dead man on the CNO towpath. Until this moment, I had good reason to believe that dead man might be you.
Who else knows I'm here?
Only Miss Channing. Why did you disappear?
He remained silent.
A man tried to harm Elizabeth, and I think she has the right to know who.
They may think Elizabeth has the envelope, he muttered.
Envelope? What envelope? Elizabeth has a right to know what this is all about.
The body you saw, that man once saved my life.
You're hiding from someone, aren't you?
Yes, and Elizabeth is not to be involved.
It's a little late for that.
Think of romantic man, alone and heroic, bending a universe to his will. What better analog than the concerto? The soloist faces the orchestra and battles it with his virtuosity until finally they join in triumphant partnership. From Mozart's time, the concerto had been a star vehicle. But the classical era composers at least remembered that the orchestra existed. By the time Tchaikovsky wrote his violin concerto in 1878, the orchestra is lucky to get a few rumbles and forebodings in edgewise before the soloist enters with his first sweet, soulful melody. That tune comes back as a rabble-rousing march,
complete with trumpets, but not before a tear-jerking second theme and considerable violinistic showing off. The showing off is the point, of course. After a short, tearful andante, the concerto's finale is a violin decathlon. Upon hearing the premiere, Vienna's top critic wrote, "The violin is no longer played, but rent asunder, beaten black and blue." What fun!